This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries. Outrageously dependable.
RingCentral's AI receptionist uses voice AI to answer on the first ring, so you'll never miss a call again. In just a few minutes, you can personalize your own AI receptionist to answer questions, route calls, schedule appointments, and even send texts in multiple languages. Plus, it's easy to scale. Create unlimited AI receptionists across any phone system. It's all powered by one reliable platform for effortless AI communications. See for yourself at ringcentral.com. RingCentral, voice of your business.
What if you could learn more about your health in under an hour? The Pronuvo Whole Body Scan gives you a comprehensive look at your health, screening for over 500 conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage one. High-quality imaging, no radiation, no contrast. Book your scan today at Pronuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com. Gain clarity, confidence, and peace of mind with Pronuvo. Invest in your health today. Visit Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.
All right, everybody. This is the Hunting Gear Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Johnson. And today's guest, Mr. Aaron Helper from the In Camp Podcast. That's correct, right? The In Camp Podcast.
It's In Camp Podcast, but it's Helper, but dyslexic, so it's Hepler.
Hepler. Oh my God. Seeing this. And I should know better because not only have I had you on other podcasts before, but it's literally spelled out right in front of me. And if I knew how to read, then I would have been able to say that.
I'm telling you, it's dyslexic, man. It's backwards, you know?
I know. Have you ever seen those little puzzles that they put and you look at it, you just glance at it and it's all these mumbo jumbo words all jumbled up.
Yeah.
But then your brain takes over and fixes it.
Yeah.
And it's like, you can read the full sentence. You know exactly what it says, even though every word is misspelled.
Yeah, exactly. And that's kind of how my last name is for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. We'll get a different last name. That's easier, buddy. Okay.
So you can cut this out, but I got to tell you. So I have a buddy and this will keep a secret because I know nobody listens to this. So my friend at work told all the girls that we work with, like all the female nurses we work with, that during nursing school, he was a male dancer. So it like came up at the bar, right? And he was like, yeah, you know, I used to dance back in school. And they were like, what? And they're like, yeah. He's like, yeah. And he's like, my stage names were Matthew Lincoln. And I don't remember what the other one was. So there are a couple girls that actually have him in their phone as like Matthew Lincoln. And so this came out at work the other day and a couple other girls who hadn't heard it were like, what? He used to dance? And they're like, yeah, you didn't know that? And I'm like, kind of like, I don't think so. And he comes up to me. He's like, dude, I told them 3 years ago that I was a male dancer. And he's like, they still don't know that I wasn't.
Oh, that's awesome. Did we? Yeah, we're definitely keeping that part of the podcast in because that's how I roll. But I like tricking people. I've played a lot of tricks on people with my missing finger.
Yeah.
And so I'm all for little jokes like that. They're harmless. They don't hurt anybody.
Yeah, man.
They don't hurt anybody.
I love pranks, but you know.
Yeah, I love pranks too. right? I've learned my lesson that I should never prank my wife, though.
Yeah.
Don't ever prank. She's not into the pranking lifestyle. I'll prank my kids. I'll jump out at them, scare the shit out of them.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But
best one I ever did was I bought a $5 cricket chirper on Amazon. It's like a little chip.
Yep.
And you pull a thing and it doesn't go on a timer. It's just between 2 and 14 minutes. It'll chirp every now and then.
Yeah.
I put it in my manager's office and it took him 6 hours to figure it out.
I definitely want to buy one of those.
Yeah, I have.
How big is it? It's just like a little.
It's like this big and it's like flat and it's got tape on the back of it. And I stuck it under his book, like I put it in his bookshelf. And every time it would go off, he'd be like, what the heck? And he was bringing people. Everybody knew that I did it. And we were all like keeping it a secret. And the one person, one of the nurse educators was like, whoa. He like pulls him in the office and he's like, turns the lights off. And he's like, they chirp better in the dark. But dude, it was great.
That's funny.
I have a video of him being, because I put it in two people's office. And I have a video of him being like, I don't understand. I mean, they were in Rosalie's office too. They have to be coming through the vents. It has to be the vents. And he's like, it's hilarious.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Before we get into the meat and potatoes of today's episode, we got to give a shout out to the partner of the Hunting Gear podcast, and that is Reveal Cellular Trail Cameras. Reveal has been doing some really amazing things in the cell cam space. Now, the way I look at it is this. Cell cams are badass, right? They let you know what's going on your property and more of a real-time thing. I like it because I'm lucky. I don't have the ability to use my cellular trail cameras like some people do, where they're able to like maybe pop right out their door and take advantage of the real-time stuff. Mm-hmm. I can't do that because most of my all of my farms are over 1 hour away to drive to.
Mm-hmm.
And so I can't keep
you an honest man.
Yeah, exactly. The cool thing though is, you know, I get to take inventory. I love seeing the fawn recruitment. I love seeing the deer use the mock scrapes. I get a really good inventory that way. Of course, velvet season, getting the inventory, not having to wait 3 months to go check a trail camera and things like that.
Yeah.
And so I'm a huge fan of those applications, but what makes Reveal really stand out past all the other companies is the updates that they've recently made to their app itself. I believe they have some predictive deer movement stuff on there. They have the ability to do some mapping software as well, like dropping pins and things like that. Seems to be standard procedure now with all that, the organization of the trail cam pictures. And then on top of that, just like the hard goods, right? The camera itself, the newer Ultra is badass. And I know from talking to some of the people in there, they have some amazing things that are going to be happening really soon, within the next couple of years that, you know, we should all be patiently excited about. So go check out tacticam.com/cameras and check out the Ultra and all the other versions that they have left for sale. And then go to any app store and download the Reveal platform app, and you'll be able to check out the functionality on there as well. So go check that out. Let's see here. Aaron, did you go to the ATA show this year?
I did not. I've never actually been to the ATA show.
Okay. All right. Yep. All right. Cool. Neither did I. So I didn't really get to walk around and see all of the new and exciting gear that's up and running around. And quite frankly, these days, I don't, unless I'm working with them, or unless it pops up on social or I hear another serious guy talk about it, I don't keep in touch with the newer products too terribly much, or I shouldn't say the newer products, because I get to hear and see them, but it's not like I used to be where I was a gear nut like into it.
Yeah.
Where do you find, or how do you educate yourself or read up on all of the newer products that are coming to market?
Dude, it is. It's kind of like, I do miss a little bit the kind of nostalgia type thing that it is with show, because it's show season right now, right? Like there's shows happening everywhere. I did go to the Great American Outdoor Show here. I spent 2 days. I went to 2 days at that. Mm-hmm. And so I got to see some cool gear, but most of my stuff there is like getting to see people. Cause you know, I used to run, run the booth with Exodus Outdoor Gear with Chad and Jake and stuff. And, so most of it's like, hey man, how's it going? How's things? But, you know, saw a couple cool things there, but honestly, it's the kind of the same way. Like I'm either listening to, you know, I listen to some of your podcasts. I listen to Clint's podcast and Jeremy Dinsmore or Mitch or whatever. And maybe I'll pick up something from them or be like, hey, what do you, I see you're using this. What do you think about that? And it's usually mostly it's word of mouth, you know? Or just doing my own research because I didn't like something that I've used and I need a better version of whatever that is.
Yeah. What's the last example you could give us about something not working and then you went out or you weren't happy with a piece of gear and you went out and started looking for the replacement for it?
So there's always like kind of compromises, right? So I'll use my pack as an example. I don't know if it's the most recent thing, but it's something that stands out the most. I used a, I'm allowed to say products, I'm assuming, because I'm not like affiliated.
You can
with
do
them, but,
whatever you want. You can
so
say what
I
you
used,
want.
I use a, used a QU Pro Suspension with a 2500 or a 3500 pack. And I love that pack. It carries so well. It's so light. It fits a lot of stuff. I'm kind of like a one in, one out type. When I'm on public land, I'm pretty far back most of the time. And I like to pack my deer out. So I want to carry as much as possible. And sometimes, like if I'm by myself, I'm going to have to take another trip most of the time. But the one thing that I found that I didn't love about that pack was that it doesn't have a meat shelf, right? It just has straps on the bottom. Great for elk quarters because they're big, right? And they fit in that and the straps aren't a big deal. But when you put two deer quarters in that, they kind of slide out the sides, slide down the middle, and it's kind of hard to tie the load in and you need extra bungee cords and then straps up and down and hope it doesn't fall out while you're like biking out or whatever.
Right.
So I ended up going with a Mystery Ranch Pop-Up 40. It's a heavier pack, but it has a nice meat shelf. It's got a little bit more room to like, you know, I've lost a lot of clothes with my QU pack because I'll end up not being able to stuff them in the pack and they fall out the sides or something like that. So that was one thing that I ended up upgrading because I just needed that little tweak, the thing that held the load in better. And I've packed out deer with it and it's been fantastic. You know, I can carry, you know, two hind quarters and both front shoulders. And hopefully I have a buddy that can carry any loose meat. And then, you know, pack my gear on top of that. And then if I'm carrying a bow, I can actually strap my bow on the back of the pack yet too. So it's got a lot of load carrying capacity and it ends up being a lot of weight, but it carries it well. So that was something that was really important. You find like these small tweaks are usually what you need to fix your gear.
And so what was the replacement? Say that again. You went from one Kuyu, and what was the next product that you...
I ended up getting a Mystery... Actually, I ended up going through three things. I used to use a Kuyu. It was a Pro Suspension with like the carbon fiber frame and a 2500 pack. And the pack wasn't big enough. I was losing stuff. So I was like, well, I'll just get a bigger pack. But then it didn't solve the meat shelf problem. So I went with a Mystery Ranch Pop-Up 40.
Okay.
And that's kind of really solved a lot of problems for me.
Yeah. I've been lucky enough to where I don't, wherever I hunt, even though I've killed whitetail like in South Dakota, dude, I knew the rancher of the walk-in. So he just pulled a side-by-side up to it, and we threw it in there, right? I've never had to pack out anything, any whitetail, per se. Now, for example, mule deer, packing a mule deer out all those years, it's been... The meat shelf didn't bother me. I've never had to pack an elk out, so I haven't had to go through that hell yet. But the mule deer that we ended up packing out was a gigantic bodied mule deer.
Yeah.
And I had a Mystery Ranch Metcalf.
Yeah.
And that's a bigger one. Uh-huh. It carries everything I need. And it also carries a lot of meat, right?
Yeah, that's like a 5,500, I think.
I believe it's pretty big. It's a pretty big pack.
Yeah.
It might even be 4,500. I can't remember. Either way, it's a bigger one.
Yeah. My buddy has that one. Yeah.
Yeah. And so it's very comfortable. It sets on the hips well. And when you're carrying heavy loads, even when I've been carrying heavy loads in, like doing a spike camp, mm-hmm. where we would load all of our tents and our food and everything we needed onto that pack, get it in there, set up camp. And then we go, you know, we have a spike camp and that's been carrying a heavy weight on the hips. And that's one thing that I've found with a pack. Even a decent whitetail pack where you're probably not traveling as far, mm-hmm. you're probably not carrying as heavy of loads in mm-hmm. and out of the timber, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. but for out west, the thing that I noticed the most that helps me over all the packs that I've had is the hip belt mm-hmm. and the shoulder straps.
Yep.
Because sometimes those shoulder straps don't come down far enough.
Yep.
For a bigger chested,
yep.
I'm not a huge dude, but yep. I guess I have a 54 inch chest,
yeah,
around there, and sometimes those straps only come to about here, and mm-hmm. I really need them to come or to where my trap is, yep. and I need them to come down a little bit further, and that's yep. what the Mystery Ranch allowed me to do, and their hip belt is. Very comfortable, sets on the hip, tighten it up really well, and you can get in there with some really heavy loads.
Yeah. I find the hip belt to be super helpful too. And yeah. Like I said, the QU pack almost carries the load better. If I was yeah. to go out west, I probably would carry my QU because I wouldn't, mm-hmm. if I was elk hunting, because I wouldn't be right. worried about the load kind of falling apart. But I do have some problems with my thoracic spine. So I maybe have old compression frag, but I get like muscle spasms there all the time.
Right.
So it's actually easier for me to pack a deer out than it is to drag it. Usually right. if I drag a deer, I hurt for days after yeah. that. But, you know, carrying capacity, they're both about the same. As far as hiking goes, the QU is probably a little more comfortable in that Western territory. You can carry water a little bit better.
Yeah.
You know, super important when you're at elevation. I didn't actually have to pack my elk out when I went. I did a public land drop camp. The guides dropped us off at a wall tent and call us when you get one kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
So they actually packed my bull out on horses. So I didn't have to worry about that. But as far as hiking around goes, man, the pack is definitely something to invest some money in.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you from the beginning why I ended up getting a really good pack, right? When I started hunting public land and we decided we're going to go really far in, a buddy and I did the thing, you know, we actually started listening to you and Mark Kenyon a lot. And, you know, then it was like Dan Infault became really popular in the bed yeah. hunting thing and like get it. So we ended up hiking real far back in this piece, scouting an area, and we decide we're going to hunt here on the first cold front we get. So it was October 22nd, and I shot my first buck with a bow. This was in 2018. I'd mm-hmm. been hunting like 18 years with a bow till then.
Yeah.
And I probably told this story to you before, but the point is I had this great idea that I was going to pack this deer out in one of those pack out vests because it was like a thing, like, oh yeah, you put the front quarters and then the back quarter. And it's basically yep. just like an apron with a big pocket in the front,
yeah.
right? And a pocket in the back. Not a good idea at all. Like, it just carries a load straight on your shoulders. There's no right. weight distribution. And we couldn't do it. Like, he had an Alps metal frame.
Yeah.
And he's like, you know, I'll carry the gear, you carry the deer. And I'm like, all right, we can do that. Dude, we made it 100 yards and we're like, ain't happening.
Yeah.
You know, so we kind of like, there was bears around that day. We kept finding bear tracks and I had seen a bear and there was a couple coyotes running around. So I was like, we covered the quarters with jackets and stuff. And
yeah,
when I shot, it was like 30 degrees. And by the time we had like quartered it and stuff, it was like in the mid 50s. and we had a 3.5 mile hike. But fortunately, when I got back to the parking lot, there was a game commission officer, and he, you know, checked our licenses, and he's like, "Oh, you seen anything?" I'm like, "Nah." And he's like, "Well, you're missing a tag." And he's like, "Did you shoot one this year?" And I was like, "I shot a 10 pointer. And he's like, "Well, where is it at?" He's like, I'm like, it's pretty far back there. And he's like, "I'll drive you back." And I don't know if it was because he was interested or like, I need to check this deer or whatever it was. But we got to like a mile and a half, and he's like, "So somewhere around here?" I'm like, "No." And it's like, you know, and he's like, and then he's like, "I can't believe you came all the way out here with the gear. Like, you're going to pack it out in that little orange vest, you know?"
Yeah.
Super nice guy. But man, I still keep in touch, and I happen to run into him in parking lots every now and then. And it's always cool to kind of catch up with him.
Yeah.
It was so long ago, you know, but it's, you know, something that's kind of cool story from the gear perspective. Yeah.
So I've had that pack, that Metcalf, for several years now, and it's awesome for out west. Right.
Mm-hmm.
For several years, my pack for my whitetail was an afterthought. I don't know why I didn't care about it. I didn't really, how do I put this? I didn't care enough about my pack. I ran a Cabela's, dude, no frame backpack. I bought it at Cabela's, and it was almost like a school backpack.
Yeah.
To be honest with you.
Yeah.
For several years, stuffed all my stuff in that. No support. Strap sucked, everything, and I just toughed it out. Uh-huh. And then I ended up, I got a, what's the brand name? Huntworth backpack. Another school backpack, and it just was not doing the trick. And then I started running a backpack, like a whitetail backpack. It looks like a school backpack, but it has the frame in it that a Western pack might have. And I'll tell you right now, dude, that changed how I carry things to the tree stand.
Mm-hmm.
That little support, and it keeps the bag from collapsing as well down on itself.
Right.
I can keep it open. I can flip the, you know, I can flip the hood of it over, and I can get all my clothes in. I can keep it open. Like, I can hang it different ways, and it's legit. And I love it because of the one reason, and it doesn't collapse in on itself.
Yeah.
I can hang it up. I actually hang it at about shoulder length, maybe when I'm standing, hip height.
Mm-hmm.
And it allows me to reach into it and keep it as a little storage facility. That's where I keep some water, or I keep my, like snacks, extra layers, things like that. The three vertical horizontal straps on it allow me to, you know, make sure my bow is strapped to it when I'm riding my e-bike or hiking in. There's two straps on the bottom where I'll put my big heavy coat or my extra big heavier layers if I, you know, can't fit them into the top. It gives me everything I need as far as like little pouches for my thumb release. There's enough pouches, the side pouches for extra water or whatever the case is. But the frame and the support of that outside of just a normal little backpack is not necessary, but it's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's not like this stuff isn't like reinventing the wheel. I mean, whitetail guys don't really need a giant pack with everything in. That was kind of like a suggestion that I got from Tony, because, you know, he's like a guy that likes to have a lot of stuff with him in the tree, you know? Yeah. And he's like, I just got the biggest pack that I could get that wasn't so big that I had a whole bunch of extra room, but I could fit everything I wanted to have on a hunt.
Right.
And I'm kind of like, you know, buy once, cry once, which obviously didn't happen because I still ended up changing some things. But, you know, the average whitetail guy isn't hunting that far in, and you don't really need to as a whitetail hunter, or maybe you're hunting small parcels or a farm that you're lucky enough to get permission on. I hunt a farm too, and I can, you know, I might not have a super long drag. If I shoot does there, I, you know, pull the truck in a field that the farmer says I can and pull it to the edge of the woods, and I'm good to go. And it is something, you know, if I'm going on public hunts that are closer to the, like I killed my buck this year very close to access, and I just drug it to the truck. And that's like a run in with my saddle on and my platform and my under this arm and my sticks under this arm, you know? And that's kind of like a good thing, you know, mix it up a little bit. So you prevent a little burnout from hiking in real far with a lot of weight. That's fine. But, preventing the burnout moving in far is, can be really helpful if you have the right gear as far as a pack goes. Mm-hmm. Especially if you're somebody who likes to, you know, adventure a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. And so the pack, I think it's crazy to say something is not necessary. It's not necessary to have the best of the best when it comes to a pack, but also it is, here's my style, right? And I think a pack can be awesome if you don't run a saddle.
Yeah.
But I run a saddle, so I have two pouches on the sides of my saddle. Uh-huh. And I run that even though I'm going to a tree stand.
Yeah.
So I wear my saddle as my safety harness now. Uh-huh. I don't wear safety harnesses anymore.
Yeah, same.
And so I'm able to carry like my release in one of those pouches, my lineman's rope in one of those pouches, and the tether itself in one of those harnesses or pockets. Also with my bino harness, I wear a Vortex bino harness, and my binos are there. My rangefinder's there. I have a little pocket for some wind detector. So a lot of the other stuff that I need, and then I connect my grunt tube to it during the rut, and it's all right here.
Yeah.
So it just makes me need the pack that much. Really, the pack is for extra clothes and or a little water.
Yeah.
And that's it, man.
Yeah. And I agree with that. If I'm going in only a half a mile, I'm usually carrying a smaller pack and I'm wearing my saddle in. I don't always wear my saddle in if I'm going in far because the swamp ass gets real, you know. it's not great, man. But or if you're like riding a bike in and you get like, I can't ride an e-bike here on game. There's areas that we can, like state forest, whatever, can't ride them on game land. So I'm riding a mountain bike in. The chafing is real if you're wearing your saddle on a mountain bike.
Yep.
So yeah, it depends on how far I'm going in, but like half mile, that's not that far. It takes me 10-15 minutes to walk that far. Unless I'm going through the woods, you know, I slow it down to stay quiet, but that's kind of like a go-to for me.
RingCentral's AI receptionist uses voice AI to answer on the first ring, so you'll never miss a call again. In just a few minutes, you can personalize your own AI receptionist to answer questions, route calls, schedule appointments, and even send texts in multiple languages. Plus, it's easy to scale. Create unlimited AI receptionists across any phone system. It's all powered by one reliable platform for effortless AI communications. See for yourself at ringcentral.com. RingCentral, voice of your business.
What if you could learn more about your health in under an hour? The Pronuvo Whole Body Scan gives you a comprehensive look at your health, screening for over 500 conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage 1. High-quality imaging, no radiation, no contrast. Book your scan today at Pronuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com. Gain clarity, confidence, and peace of mind with Pronuvo. Invest in your health today. Visit Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
Pretty much always carry it if I'm rifle hunting, because I'm fortunate to know somebody that's got a Northwoods cabin now, and I spent the last two rifle seasons for the first couple days of our gun season hunting in the snow and kind of doing that thing, and we don't really sit, like, kind of just pick a direction and walk, you know, and it's fun, you know. I killed my first PA Northwoods buck last year. And it was cool, man. It was a cool experience. He's probably, I don't know. We thought maybe he was a 3-year-old. He's not a giant rack, but man, it's heavy, you know, dark antlers, and really cool experience in that kind of setting. So,
yeah, that's awesome, man. That's awesome. Out of curiosity, what bino, do you run a bino harness?
Yeah, I like the marsupial gear harness.
Okay, talk to me about what makes that one stand out for you.
So, I mean, that was kind of like I bought a bunch of same thing you with whitetail packs. Like, It was either like a Cabela's or some like cheap Amazon brand or something that I was using. And it was like, you know, the straps never fit right, or they loosened and you had to be like fiddling with this or something hung off of it there. And I ended up going with Marsupial Pack. Clint Campbell and I were out scouting and it, you know, it always fit him so well. And he's like, hey, you got to try this on, you know, and there's the word of mouth thing, you know. You can add things onto that, like the rangefinder pouch or a gun holster or whatever. Yeah. I like the flip front. It's got one of the magnetic lids, you know, so you can flip the magnetic lid front. Adjustment straps kind of lock in. So it's pretty great. It's awesome for shed hunting. It's real quick. I don't have my binoculars tethered to it. They do have binocular tethers, but they kind of annoy me because I always get stuck. You know, it's an extra strap. Right. So I just able to pull my binoculars out of there, lift them up, throw them back in. And I do use, I think I have, what do I have in them right now? I think I have 10, 8x10s in there right now. Okay. At Vortex, Razorbacks. So,
right. Yeah.
But I love that bino harness. It's anything you can get that has stuff that's not flopping around and can get tangled in something. I like that a lot, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I use a Vortex bino harness. And really the reason I bought it or the reason I have it is because I have like Vortex binoculars, right?
Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Dude, when it comes to a brand, like I like to, I'm not very, how do I put this? I'm loyal when there's a product that makes me really happy, like Vortex optics, right? Yeah. I love their optics.
Fantastic. Yeah.
Yeah. Wasp Archery, my favorite broadheads, period, on the market. I've been using those for so long. And I really haven't had a time where any of those products, I haven't even had a time where I've even questioned their products. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so when you can run into a brand like that, I'm just extremely loyal to try their other products. Mm-hmm. When I know like some of the brands, like you mentioned the marsupial gear, I've heard really good things about that.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes to certain brands, I'm like, okay, well, I might as well, if their other products are that good, well, then I got to try out their other products too.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, and absolutely.
So, yeah. And so that's where I've kind of just kind of stuck with the Vortex bino harness. And I have two of them. And the only reason I upgraded to the other one, it has a little bit more room in it and some bigger pouches and stuff. My other one that I had, man, I beat the shit out of these things, walking, crawling, belly crawling for mule deer, climbing up and down and just like having the entire front of it. You know, like if you've ever done a run and gun setup and there's times where you got to like hug the tree and you're really just rubbing the tree on all this stuff. Dude, no issues with those things.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how I, like you, I really don't give, like, I don't care what the brand name is, really. The only time I care is when I know I'm not going to use that brand again. And that's usually when it fails me. Something fails me in a time where I, like, it cost me a deer, let's say. Then I'm just going to be like, I can't take that risk again. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, I hear you, man. And that's kind of like, that's why you tweak the gear, right?
Yeah.
Because there was something that a mistake had to be had or your, as a pack, the pack example, the quarters fell out of your pack and you had to tie it back in five times in a hike. Like that's all stuff of why you upgrade or change gear. A lot of this stuff is really, really good. It almost doesn't matter what brand you use. And, you know, oftentimes if the brand works for you, loyalty isn't really a bad thing.
Right.
I like that thought. So,
yeah, if you don't feel comfortable naming the actual brand, tell me the last time you had a product potentially fail on you and you like really started reconsidering even using it again.
this was probably more user error. So it was probably my biggest faux pas in the woods. Okay. Most of the time, the gear is like this stuff's all there. They have good safety. Everything has good safety ratings because nobody wants to get sued. Nobody wants to see anybody get hurt. I have tethered one sticks.
Yep.
They're pretty sharp. Right.
Yep.
And they have Amsteel ties, you know, ropes to put around the tree.
Yep.
Amsteel doesn't stretch. So you kind of got to be careful on a tree using Amsteel. You got to make sure it's seated very well so the bottoms don't kick out. Right. 2 years ago, I climbed a tree that was kind of like angled on the bottom and went back up to a straight, straight post.
Yeah.
When I was coming down, I had put my bottom stick below this like angle and I couldn't get around the angle with my lineman's rope to get down. It's the last stick. You're kind of like, whatever. So I'm on the second to last stick and I was like, well, I'm just going to, so I unhooked my lineman's rope. And so here there's the user error. Right. And I stepped on the bottom stick, you know, the bottom stick's only really like, to the top of it's maybe 4 or 5 feet, not really a big deal, but I was still I had 1 foot on the second stick and 1 foot on the bottom stick. And as soon as I put a little bit of pressure on that bottom stick, the stick just went completely sideways because the Amsteel wasn't locked in right on near that angle.
Yeah.
And I fell 6 feet. Fortunately, I was wearing my pack and I fell straight on my back in a pile of rocks.
Okay. You know?
And, I must have like put my right hand back into the rocks. I don't know. It happened so fast, but I remember feeling like the sharp top of the stick where my hand was. And then I remember shoving my hand into the rocks and my hand was all tore up, you know?
Yeah.
And, it kind of went numb, like, but I was cold. So I'm like, oh, it's just getting the feeling back in it. And I'm like picking up all my stuff. And now there's all of a sudden there's blood all over my pack and there's blood on my bow. And I'm like, what is happening? And I like pulled my glove back and my hand was just covered in blood. And I'm like, oh man, you know, so fortunately I didn't get hurt, but that's kind of like a user error, but it's one thing that you kind of got to be careful with. Like, I know Amsteel doesn't stretch, but in the dark, I was kind of rushing and thinking like, oh, it's fine. You know, those are things like, if you can't make it second nature, you maybe ought to change that tie-in rope to something that stretches a little bit or, or, you know, just keep in mind, you got it. Like, I don't know that it would have helped if I would have had my lineman's rope, but I probably would have smashed my face into the second stick, but I don't know.
Yeah.
User error though. Mostly.
Yeah. A little bit of user error.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think the last time that I had an issue and I felt like it maybe cost me a deer, and I'm lucky it wasn't on a big buck, but it was secondary market lighted knocks.
Mm.
And again, this potentially could be user error, but I felt like I followed the instructions to get them in. And this was several years ago before the technology had changed to make it like real easy. I think now it's just like even a button, like you can push a button on them or something like that and they go. But so I'm that guy who's like, all right, if I'm going to use something, I want to practice with it first, right? I'm not just going to throw a lighted knock on my arrow and, you know, all of a sudden just go out and hunt with it. Like that's not me.
Yeah.
And so I got these lighted knocks. I put them on my arrow because I felt it would be cool to see the trajectory of the arrow or potentially, you know, see where the arrow fell out at if the light's on and maybe help me recover deer, whatever the case is. And as I'm shooting it, like practicing with them, I could not get the lights to turn off.
Oh no.
On them. Okay. Yeah. And so, and then also they kept like a couple of them would just kind of pop out when I would shoot them. A couple of them would stay on the string after I shot the arrow and it'd send my arrow down. And I started to have some, consistency issues with that. And for some reason I was like, at 20 yards, it's not going to make a big difference. Cause that's usually my shots or whatever. And number one, I couldn't get him to shut off. And number two, like, I wouldn't say every time, but I would say maybe like one out of every 10 shots, it'd come out or my shit. Yeah. Like, I don't know. Maybe I didn't follow the instructions the right way, but I went out early season that year and I said, I'm going to grab a doe and get the freezer filled, draw back. Everything's fine. Arrow, hit the release. Arrow goes and just shanks one direction. Mm-hmm. And I completely miss the doe at like 19 yards.
Oh no.
The lighted knock is on. Mm-hmm. It's green, mm-hmm. but it's still attached to my string. And my arrow didn't, so it must have like something happened there, mm-hmm. and it just yanked out again.
Yeah.
And so those were supposed to be like, hey, very simple. Pull them out, put them right back in. Everything's good. I think I even, on a lot of them, I even put like a dab of glue in there to keep them tight after they started falling off.
Yeah.
And so the secondary lighted knocks, I had that 1 year worth of experiences, or actually that same year after I had those issues with the lighted knocks, I put factory knocks back in and re-sighted in my entire bow before my November hunt. And since then I've never used lighted knocks. Have you ever used lighted knocks?
No, I ended up going, so I, because of working with Exodus, I still have a bunch of their, MMT arrows.
Yeah.
That they used to make. And, they were white knock guys. They all mm-hmm. liked following a white knock. So I went with their white knocks and I like them.
Yeah.
I've never used lighted knocks, but I like the concept of lighted knocks because, I mean, it's obviously easier to find your arrow, to track your shot, that kind of thing. But you can see a white knock pretty well.
Yeah.
So that's kind of my go-to there. I can tell you, though, as far as like an aftermarket thing, or not really an aftermarket thing, but quality, where quality matters is SD cards.
Mm.
And so the user error part of an SD card in a trail camera is... you get a card and you put it in multiple different kinds of cameras, right?
Right.
That ends up glitching the card out, or they don't like, let's say.
So I will say this.
Yeah.
Did you know, and this is something that I found out.
Yeah.
Did you know that certain trail cameras in their code, once you use an SD card in their camera, you can never use it in another trail camera.
Exactly.
They do that on purpose.
Yeah, because it writes the code a certain way. And then, mm-hmm. You can use them and they'll maybe work once or twice.
Right.
But what usually ends up happening is that, let's say you put the card into a Tasco camera and then you put the card into an Exodus camera. Mm-hmm. Well, I'll still have... you'll reformat the card and I'll put it in the computer. And when I open the tabs, it's Exodus pictures, but on the thumbnails, it's all Tasco pictures still. Yeah. You know, even though the card's reformatted, it's because the code has been written to it already because they use different components, all that stuff. So it's pretty important to have maybe two cards for one camera, or like, I only use this brand of camera.
Mm-hmm.
And the other important thing with SD cards is the writing speed. So cameras don't write really fast like all the technology does. So anything that's like over 120 is kind of what I've had luck with. But usually a camera that writes at 100 is pretty good for a trail camera. So those are kind of things that you know. And the annoying thing is my buddy and I, that I hunt deer with the most, like all our trail cameras are in my garage, mm-hmm. and we end up reformatting all the cards and forget which card what went to. Mm-hmm. I think 50% of our cameras this year, we ended up putting the wrong cards in and being like, it didn't take pictures or whatever. So kind of user error on that part, but
I don't think it's user error though. On sometimes it is.
Yeah. I've, just knowing that I shouldn't do that is
exactly.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you this, I went from covert trail cameras at one point, and their life cycle has now expired.
Yeah.
I mean, 3 years out of those, and you're...
Yeah.
I mean, and they were a decent brand.
Yeah.
Then I went to Exodus.
Yeah.
And as I was moving cards over from covert to Exodus, even reformatting them, mm-hmm. going over and putting it and hitting the click button, right? Yeah. The reformat button.
Yeah.
Dude, my cards did not work. Those cards did not work. So I went out, all of that done, came home, said it was, you know, like the SD card will give a number and it will say 0 out of 27, you know, like 2,700 pictures available.
Yeah.
Or something like that.
Yeah.
I go back a couple months later to check them. Zero. Zero oh, no. pictures taken because Covert's coding did not allow other trail cameras to use. You had to go into a computer mm-hmm. and reformat the entire card, basically like delete the card back to zero and reformat it. And nobody's going to do that, dude.
Yeah. Well, and I do that. And sometimes it still doesn't work. Like you might get, it depends on the quality of the card. Like if you buy like Walmart's brand or whatever mm-hmm. their brand is, and then you buy like a SanDisk or something. Mm-hmm. Well, the SanDisk might work a couple of times over and you might get lucky, but usually it doesn't. Mm-hmm.
Right.
So that's kind of like something that if your goal is to like kind of figure some stuff out and you put a lot of work into cameras, mm-hmm. like spend the extra $7 to $14 for a second card for the camera. Cause I mean, it really sucks to do all that work and then not have pictures because pictures are fun.
Right.
You know, if you're using SD card cameras, but.
Right. Absolutely. But here, check this out. So Reveal now, the cell cams that I've started using.
Yeah.
You don't even need an SD card anymore.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You would need it if you're in an iffy spot, mm-hmm. right? Because the camera will still take pictures whether or not there's cell service.
Okay.
So in some of the river bottom cameras or ground that I have, I just run my old Exodus cameras.
Yeah.
But on... the cell cams, dude, I don't need to worry about formatting anymore because mm-hmm, mm-hmm. it still sends the picture to your phone and that's where it's all housed now.
Right.
So you don't even need that anymore.
Right.
And that, like, I'm telling you, in a handful of years, there won't even be SD cards anymore.
No, and it's kind of like
in cameras.
Yeah. I it's kind of a shame because I do like running SD card cameras and the cell reception can be kind of a problem.
Yeah.
And I do feel like they force you to scout a little bit better. Uh-huh. I run cell cameras too. I like all of it. I think it's important to stay honest with those things. You know, I like integrity in hunters and I hope you use it, ethically.
Yeah.
So that being said, I think it's all fun. It's part of something that you can use as a tactic and I think you can use it as a tool. But that's how it goes from that. As far as testing gear, you know, you mentioned you never like to go out before you practice with something.
Yeah.
And one thing I can remember, it didn't really happen to me, but I was there for it. When we went, so I elk hunted with four people, right? And I bought one of those. We were talking about, you know, water filtration before we went. And I bought one of those Grail, you know what I'm talking about? The Grail mm-hmm. water bottles that it's a cup and you squeeze the insert into it, takes like zero time and it's almost a liter of water. Great product. Loved that thing so much for that entire hunt. And I'm like filling stuff up, no problem. My buddy's got like a 3 liter gravity drainage thing. And mm-hmm. when we're at the trailhead, we're like getting ready to go. He's like, oh, I'll borrow some of your water. And it's like, yeah, sure, whatever. And we get to the campsite. Now, he's used this water thing in the past because we've gone on have a couple state forests here you're allowed to camp in. So we've taken mm-hmm. our kids camping and used the water filter thing. They think that's fun. So one time we used his water filter for the first time he ever used it and it worked, right? Well, 3 years later, we go on an elk hunt. I'm like, did you check your water filter before you left? And he's like, yeah, it's fine. I'm like, did you check it? And he's like, nah, it worked the last time I used it. Why wouldn't it work? I'm like, okay. And we get to the, he's going to listen to this, so he's going to get mad. But we get to the thing and he fills this thing and no water goes through the filter. Like it won't drain. And I'm like, fortunately, the elk guides had like a 5 gallon gravity filter that they had set up at the camp. So we could use that. But I'm like, man, we'd have been using my liter water bottle for everybody all week.
Yeah. Man, I'll tell you this. I had an experience in 2016, I believe it was.
Uh-huh.
It was my second trip to South Dakota.
Uh-huh.
I went by myself this time, and I was like two miles in.
Uh-huh.
And it was crazy because you know how Western public land is. I'm probably quarter mile from a road.
Yeah.
But in order to get to their public, you had to go through private, and yeah. Nobody wants to give you access to it.
Right.
I didn't have enough money at the time to pay trespassing fees.
Right.
And so I parked at the trailhead, and I walked in like a mile and a half, 2 miles, set up a tent, and it was warmer, so I was going through water way faster than what I did.
Uh-huh.
And I brought in like 4 liters with me. And that uh-huh. lasted me like a day or two,
uh-huh.
like two and a half days. And then I was like, okay, well, I have to get some more water. So I went down to this mud hole basically and tried to use this pump filter
yeah.
that I had. And previous years it worked fine
uh-huh.
and it worked in my elk, you know, on my elk hunts, but the pump water filter, something seized up in it
uh-huh.
and it did not work.
Oh no.
Okay. It did not work.
Yeah.
And so I had to make the decision, okay, well, what am I going to do now? And there is nothing worse than what I'm about to tell you. I had those little
iodine tablets
that killed everything that's in there, right? Makes
yeah.
the water clean, but it does not remove grains of dirt and sand
taste.
And the taste out of it.
Ugh.
Okay. So the water was good to drink, but I was yeah. drinking like sand water.
Ugh.
And it was brown. And I was just like, God, I have to make a choice. Do I hike back out and go get some water somewhere and then hike it back in? Or do mm-hmm. I stay here? And so what I did was I used that water to cook with. I treated it while I was going out hunting.
Yeah.
Would come back. And dude, I could remember eating my freeze-dried meals and just feeling sand in my teeth. It sucked,
man.
Or drinking the last day I decided to do it, I was in my Nalgene bottle. I was drinking water and the sediment would sink to the bottom of it. It was brown water. And I was like, oh my God,
I ran
a risk and probably shouldn't have done it. But you know, I threw in one extra iodine tablet in there just to double make sure. It tasted like shit, dude.
I mean, honestly, they're a good backup, like
yeah,
in a pinch, in an emergency or whatever. That's something else, man. The food too, like, I don't know if Chad Sylvester ever told you that story, but he had some dehydrated meals on an elk hunt 2 years ago. And he had like a really rough day, like nobody wanted to cook anything. And he mm-hmm. just kind of like put the water on, sat down, poured the water in the thing. And it's dark. It was just when he got back real late from being out for elk. And he did a big spoonful of this granola cereal at night. And he's like, it's moving. And he like looks in the bag and it's full of earwigs.
No shit. How did they get in?
I don't know. Like, I don't know if it was like they got in and laid eggs, or maybe there was a pinhole in it or something, but
oh my
he had
God.
a whole mouthful of earwigs.
I bet you he never used that brand again.
Dude, he was like, it was, he, Chad, I'm sure he was pissed, you know?
Oh my God.
But he's got a lot of good stories when it comes to that stuff. But man, that's, I mean, I don't know what you're going to do about that. Check your bags for pinholes. Yeah. I don't know.
I'll tell you this, man. The price of some of those freeze-dried meals for backcountry hunts, man, you're getting up into the $20 range, right?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
it's getting expensive to the point where I used to talk shit on Mountain House.
Yeah.
But now I'm like, Mountain House is really affordable for a backcountry meal.
Yeah.
And they kind of constipate me a little bit, but I've figured out how to solve that problem by bringing apples with me.
Mm-hmm.
And so instead of just eating freeze-dried meals, I will bring a fresh, like, I'm not as much of an ounce counter. Mm-hmm. So I will take 5 apples with me and I'll eat one apple a day. And that seems to get the juices in my body flowing enough to where I'm not having the constipation issues by just eating freeze-dried meals.
Yeah. Well, and that can be worse when you're at elevation, right? Mm-hmm. Because mm-hmm. It's really easy to get dehydrated at 10,000 feet if you're hunting elk. Even mule deer at 3,000 feet, it starts a little bit there, you know?
Right.
And that's kind of something that's pretty important to Western hunting. Like, you kind of need to work your way up to drinking that much water a day.
Right.
But prior to the elk hunt that I went on, I was drinking like 6 to 8 liters a day.
Yeah.
But you have to balance that with sodium. Like, you don't want your sodium to get too low, and you can dilute that pretty bad. But you do get dehydrated pretty fast. And that's, if you're eating dehydrated meals that you're rehydrating, those are like, that's like a recipe for, you know, squatting over a hole for quite a while.
I literally didn't take a poop for 5 days, and then I finally got out of elevation, went to go grab a burger at a restaurant on our way out of town, and I drank like 6 glasses of water, big giant things of water, and that woke something up in me. And finally, water was getting to my intestines. And dude, I had a bowel, this is gross, but I had a bowel movement that felt like rocks, dude. That's how dry my body was and dehydrated it was. And so, there's one brand back in the day that I used to use. I haven't used them in a while, but they're based out of Alaska. Heather's Choice, I believe, is the name of it.
Uh-huh.
And that was a really good, that didn't seem to block me up at all.
Yeah. I mean, she does those homemade meals pretty much.
Right.
I think there's one thing that you have to think of with dehydrated meals too, is like, depending on the elevation, you're not going to have an appetite. So you got to have things you're going to like the taste of. I know, some of my buddies did like salmon chowder or something.
Mm-hmm.
I just couldn't get it past their mouth because they were tired and drained and stuff. So I think, you know, sometimes keeping it simple is fine. You know, Cabela's has a brand, it's Alpine. I think that brand was pretty good. They had like a good, I hate saying this, but it was a vegetable chili.
Mm-hmm.
And that actually kind of helped things. But I liked some of the Peak Refuel meals.
Yep. Yep.
They're expensive, I'm a huge but they fan are of good.
They're expensive, but they're good, right? And they're worth it, I think. What are they? The Spanish rice?
Yeah.
It's like brown sugar rice or whatever. Oh, my God. That's so good.
Yeah. I like the coconut chicken curry one. It's pretty good for a midweek thing.
Yep.
They're all pretty hearty. The Chad Mendez line.
Yeah.
Whew, like, I could eat like half of those. You know what I mean? They're pretty heavy, but
yeah, the sweet pork rice from Peak Refuel is really good.
Yeah, that's a real good one.
What was my other one? The sweet pork and rice, the chicken Alfredo, obviously. I don't eat breakfast usually.
I didn't like the skillet one. It was too, so I took Diamox before I went too. So that does change the taste of some things like,
And that's the anti-elevation.
It's correct. It's actually like a mild diuretic, and we don't have to get into the science behind it, but yes, it helps you acclimate faster, but it does make carbonated things taste like shit. So don't drink beer before you go,
right?
Don't drink beer before you go up the hill. And, it does make, you know, those like honey stinger waffles.
Yeah.
I love those things, but with Diamox and elevation, they are horrible. They just change the taste of it, and it's just not good. So just expect like things that you might like the taste of might taste a little flat or kind of just different.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
If that's something you're doing.
Absolutely.
It was my first time that high, so that's why I ended up doing that. And I did go with a pulmonologist, and he was like, you should take this. And I was like, okay.
I didn't do that. My first trip I went on, but every other Western elk hunt at elevation, I definitely took those pills, man. Worth it 100%.
Yeah. It just like, honestly, it just, what it does is it fixes contraction alkalosis and, just helps you acclimate faster. But, mm-hmm. I mean, I went with all medical professionals. Both my friends are both, one's a PA, one's a nurse practitioner, and then one of them's the pulmonary intensivist that I worked with for a long time. He's a big elk hunter, but he goes, usually he hunts in New Mexico and he takes it every time he goes.
Yeah.
Because he's gone so much, I took that advice from him and I didn't regret it because, man, it feels different at 5,000 feet. And when you get to like 9, you're kind of starting to suck eggs a little bit.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep. 100%. 100%. Well, I think this has been a great conversation so far.
Yeah.
I really appreciate you taking time out of our day. I know we could talk for hours about this kind of stuff.
For sure.
But Aaron Hepler, do me a favor and let everybody know where they can find the In Camp podcast at.
Yeah, you can find it on Spotify and Apple. Appreciate the plug, man.
Yep, absolutely.
It'll be a year at the end of March for me, so I'm pretty excited.
That's awesome, dude.
I recorded that episode with a good mutual friend of ours, and I can't wait for it to come out.
Bingo.
It's a good one. And I started a little In Camp swag on there, so there is some stuff if people... There's a link in my Instagram and stuff. It's incamp_podcast on there. So
love it. Love it. All right, Aaron, man, hopefully you have a good rest of your spring into the good summer. I know we're thinking about gear here a lot as we get it closer to or further away from the hunting season and closer to the next hunting season. So if you guys if you guys could do me a favor and go to iTunes or Spotify, wherever you download the How to Hunt. Or excuse me, I gotta make sure I'm saying the right podcast. I do too many of them. The Hunting Gear Podcast. Please leave a 5-star review. The Hunting Gear Podcast can also be found on YouTube if you like watching video versions. We put it there too. Good vibes, everybody, and we'll talk to you next time.
Thanks, Dan.
RingCentral's AI receptionist uses voice AI to answer on the first ring, so you'll never miss a call again. In just a few minutes, you can personalize your own AI receptionist to answer questions, route calls, schedule appointments, and even send texts in multiple languages. Plus, it's easy to scale. Create unlimited AI receptionists across any phone system. It's all powered by one reliable platform for effortless AI communications. See for yourself at ringcentral.com. RingCentral, voice of your business.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial. If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.